Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Why people select the companion animals they do is a subject that's long intrigued me and many others who study the human-animal bond. It's a question I routinely ask my clients. That's if it's necessary. Often it isn't, because many people automatically volunteer this information because they consider it so vital to their relationship to the animal. I do too. But I also know how human expectations can affect animal behavior, health, and the quality of the bond, for better or for worse. In retrospect, I should have known that the answers to this question would change quite a bit over time. I am, after all, the person who chose to embrace the world of little dog companionships after the death of an arthritic 40-pound dog I carried up and down a steep, narrow staircase some humans wouldn't venture. And I did this at least twice a day for his last year. That makes me part of an emerging demographic. Aging boomers whose downsizing may include the size of the dogs they add to their households. Some may make this transition for practical reasons like I did. They enjoy dogs and can't imagine not having one. But they also acknowledge that they can't or don't want to contend with big dog energy and issues at this stage of their lives. Meanwhile, others in this same group may opt for big dogs because they now have the free time and more income to devote to these animals and engaging in activities with them. Others in the pet-owning population add cats to their household, whether they had a dog or not. This includes avowed cat haters who become besotted with cats for often inexplicable reasons. Some because the cats looked at them with rapt adoration. Others fell in love with filthy but cheerful feline ragbags. A bemused few admitted they felt an instant kinship with an arrogant cat who glared or even hissed at them in response to their lame, "Nice kitty kitty." I would have done the same thing if someone spoke to me in that tone of voice, said a man who experienced such a life-changing event. Over the years, expectations imposed on pets in families with young children also have changed. In the post-World War II era, the majority of parents wanted stable pets they could trust with their kids. Back then, that usually meant getting a puppy or a kitten born into a pet home environment. Some of these animals were friendlier than others, but parents taught their kids dog sense. In those days, references to Disney movies evoked memories of old Yeller, not all those adorable animals with their inevitably happy endings of later years. Each orientation inspired expectations that colored human images of our own existing or dream pets. Another expectation changer occurred when more women began to migrate into the workforce, out of necessity or by choice. Because women traditionally had been the primary caregivers of the pet animals as well as the kids, their absence triggered behavioral problems in animals accustomed to living with others. During this same period, human-animal bond studies increasingly positioned companion animals as sources of improved human physical and mental health. This shifted human expectations away from the give-and-take relationship in which human and animal accepted the good as well as the bad in each other to one that positioned animals as responsible for our physical and mental health. Consequently, when these animals behaved in a manner that complicated instead of enhanced their lives, some owners felt angry, cheated, and betrayed by the animal. This shift toward more emotional and away from knowledge-based pet expectations received another big boost when the word rescue replaced adopt in the marketing of unowned animals. Brilliant marketing though it was, it ranks right up there with responsible people spay and neuter their pets as an unintended consequence generator. But without a doubt, the mass transport of unknown animals following Hurricane Katrina in 2005 firmly entrenched the image of transporters and adopters as saviors and the animals as victims instead of survivors in the public psyche. In such ways, human expectations regarding their animals tilted more and more in the human-centered direction. But because it was driven by love, including perceived love of the animals, the fact that the approach might not benefit the animal never crossed our minds. Weaving throughout these changes over the years are expectations imposed on pets related to a sad reality of modern times: war and increasingly severe natural disasters. When these occur, soldiers serving in the military service or National Guard may be deployed to troubled and dangerous areas, leaving their loved ones at home. Over the years, I've encountered a small but heartbreaking population of these folks, those who inadvertently give their dogs mixed messages before they depart that may complicate life enormously for those left behind with the dog. So far, all the animals I've encountered have been bull breeds or shepherds identified with police or military work. Thus far, the soldiers all experienced very close relationships with these dogs and often spent a great deal of time alone with them prior to their deployment. Those with the courage to admit it admitted that they loved these animals and confided concerns about the future to their dogs that they couldn't or didn't want to share with their loved ones. At the same time, though, they also trained their dogs as if the animals would be living in war zones with them because they wanted the dogs to protect their loved ones while they were gone. But that didn't help those left behind, who lived in areas with lots of kids and friends and family checking in, or friends and family who would like to check in, if only the dog would let them. Although these dogs would do anything for the person who trained them, like so many one-person dogs, they were essentially untrained relative to everyone else. Once the soldier deployed, the partner, spouse, and any kids became prisoners in their own home. The dogs determined who could enter, what they could do while they were inside the house, and how long they could stay. This created such anxiety for the family that they soon began telling others to stay away when they needed their support the most. The most gut-wrenching part of this occurred when the partner or spouse raised the subject of the dog's aggression, and the soldier told the stay-at-homes they needed to train the dog exactly the way the soldier had. But sometimes that meant using methods, such as shock collars or other forms of corporal punishment, that the partner or spouse found unacceptable, or using more positive approaches that obviously had not worked. At the same time, though, those living with the animal may hesitate to challenge these recommendations. Like many with loved ones engaged in potentially life-threatening circumstances, They didn't want to spend what little time they had to communicate arguing about the dog. In these cases, the soldiers inadvertently communicated their anxiety about their own well-being and that of their loved ones to the dogs instead of the confidence and stability these animals needed. And because the dogs lacked the temperament to fulfill these mutually exclusive expectations, these animals became a source of anxiety instead of comfort for those left behind too. Like so many aspects of our relationship with our pets, we often have very clear ideas about what we expect them to do. Moreover, these change over time. If we're lucky, our pets' own expectations regarding us and their own lives will complement ours. If not, these discordant expectations may result in behavioral problems for the animals that complicate their and our own lives. But it doesn't have to be that way. By comparing our expectations with our pet's physical, behavioral, and bond ability to fulfill them, and making any adjustments necessary, we can take our animal's changing expectations into account, as well as our own.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.